involved in the politics.
Good afternoon. I'll call the Monday, February 16th meeting of the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development to order. Members, we have two bills posted, and we are going to take them in reverse order than they appear on your agenda. So I will start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2298, and we will have Jeremy tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2298 clarifies that an employee must be granted a leave of absence by the employee's employer for the purpose of performing active duty, state duty, as ordered by the Adjutant General. The more important thing, it increases the maximum amount of donated leave a qualified employee can receive, which was previously limited by the employee's base salary, and now it's the employee's total compensation, which includes overtime pay, and it includes a definition of how that overtime pay is calculated.
Thank you, Jeremy. And I see in the room a good friend of the committee's and of mine, Representative Sal Esquivel. So if you'd like to come forward and kick things off, and did you want to have friends join you at the witness table?
I'm glad to.
General? Great.
Mary?
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Commerce and Workforce Development Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's always a delight to visit senators. We are in the same building, you know, but we don't see much of you, but it's nice to see you. House Bill 2298 changes the way an employee's average salary is calculated for maximum amount of leave state employees can donate to an employee who is deployed. Now,
so, Representative Esquivel, I'm being prompted to ask you who you are. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm Sal Esquivel, Representative of District 6. The state's military donated leave program allows workers to donate leave into paid leave pools in which deployed employees can draw funds to supplement their income. It came to our attention in our looking into this that a lot of your deployed people take a drastic pay cut, which surprised me, and you'll see another bill coming through that I have done, which is off this a little bit, but we're also charging these people, believe it or not, state income tax in a hazardous duty zone, which I can't believe we are, but we are. We're going to correct that, folks. The maximum amount which an employee can draw from the pool is based upon an employee's salary. However, there has been numerous cases in which employees whose wages include overtime, and the overtime is not included into the base itself for the donated leave. House Bill 2298 changes the calculation of the maximum amount of donated leave a member can receive in the program to include an employee's average overtime wages. The bill also extends these provisions to local jurisdictions that provide a similar donated leave pool. It also expands the requirement for granted leave of absence to include being called into the service by the Adjutant General in the state of Oregon. This is a great program. This program allows people that do not need the leave to donate that monies that they get paid for anyway to our people that are in service. Some of these people that come in front of us in the Veterans Committee explain that they lose $1,500, $2,000 a month just by being in the service and called active duty. This would help take the sting out of it for them, and it would also give us an opportunity, which we have done so valiantly in the past, is to support our people that are deployed into a combat zone.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And can you hang in here with us?
I'd love to, Madam Chair. I haven't been with you since we did rules.
That's correct. Good. Thanks a lot. And whichever of you would like to go next, please go ahead.
I would defer to rank.
And I see Brigadier General Mike Caldwell with us.
Yes, ma'am. For the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department, and we support House Bill 2298. Maybe a little bit of history on it. I think it was in the 2005 session when President Courtney came up with the proposal initially to allow state service, when state employees were mobilized, because of what the good representative just indicated about the differences in pays. And frankly, the most important thing of that session was pay wasn't as important as insurance. And what we experienced as we converted people from under the control of the governor and what is known in the federal parlance as Title 32 service to Title 10 service, leaving state service, control of the governor, to the federal service, to the control of the president, was a lot of the TRICARE system that was set up by the federal government to take care of these folks simply wasn't mature enough here in this state. We had terrible times getting physicians to treat families, and so they would lose their typical insurance, and only in a couple of instances, you know, did it matter so much. And those were really peculiar, but yet they were important, and that was, in this sense, some special needs children were getting treatment here at a local facility, and they wouldn't take the TRICARE insurance, so they had to add an extra burden on top of the primary breadwinner of the family being deployed into Iraq or Afghanistan. But now, in order to get this specialized service for these special needs children, they had to go to Portland to get a physician who would take care of it. So Senator Courtney spearheaded an effort to try to extend these either pools and or salaries in any way, shape, or form so they could maintain the insurance program that they were under. Now, I will tell you, and I believe the good representative would probably echo this, is that TRICARE under TriWest Management has done a much, much better job. We're a lot further along than we were in 2005, but nevertheless, what this bill does is not only make this, as he indicated, a pool, but it also allows state active duty, which we hadn't thought of back then, and don't ask me why we didn't. It was just simply an oversight, and as you noticed it recently, in both in December and in January, with the big storms we had about 250 guardsmen on active duty, state active duty, for the snowstorm and the floods. And they did all kinds of wonderful things up in Gresham, as you may have seen in the paper and on the news. But those folks, again, they leave their homes, they leave everything quickly, abruptly, at the call of the governor, in this case through the adjutant general, and then all of a sudden they end up maybe taking the longest we had was, I think, 15 days, 16 days. But they just lose a half a month's salary for serving their state. And there are folks that are willing to donate, you know, that their other fellow employees are willing to take care of them and help them out. And it certainly wasn't what you expect at Christmas time to say, well, we want you to come out and serve your fellow Oregonian, but we're going to punish you by not allowing something to as simple as this. And so I think for all those reasons and many more, this is a good bill. I think it does what we should have done in 2005 had we thought of it, and we just simply didn't think of it. So I think this is good to get it corrected, get it moving on. And we're going to have, as you probably already know, but we're going to have roughly 3,000 Oregonians be mobilized to Iraq in May, and they will actually get on the ground in Iraq the first part of July, and they should be home by late April the next year. So that's the first wave. We anticipate another wave after that for an additional 600 to 700 soldiers that will come probably within 8 months after that. So whether we like the situation that's going on or don't, all that aside, these folks are still impacted. They're still impacted and it impacts their families. So anything we can do, I think, to kind of lessen that blow is certainly worth our efforts. And I'll answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General, for your testimony. Mary, please go ahead.
For the record, I'm Mary Botkin, and I am the lobbyist for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And I would like to take credit for having thought of this bill. I did not. This is literally a member-driven bill, and in the House we had two of our folks from the prison system up in Pendleton come down to testify on the bill. They were not able able to get time off today to be here. So I'm going to try and be a sit-in for them. One of the gentlemen is going to be, he's being called up again for his second tour to Afghanistan in just a few days. And so this is especially important to he and his wife. The last tour, they started foreclosure proceedings while he was in Afghanistan because of the severe economic cut that the family took with him moving from state employment to military pay. And what we found out was that the way they were calculating his salary was they were not including any of his overtime. And because overtime for corrections employees is such a standard procedure, many families learn to depend on that. And so what we've done is this bill just simply incorporates that into the base salary and into the total compensation. And it is not a made-up number. The state of Oregon or the employer will actually calculate the average overtime of that employee and calculate based on their average overtime, not on an average overtime of somebody else. And his coworkers will, or her coworkers in many cases, will be allowed to contribute enough time to make that up. And as long as there's time in the pool, then they will be able to receive some subsidized salary. This is a really important bill to a number of our members. The Department of Corrections has the largest percentage of deployed employees of any state agency. It's probably not surprising because of the paramilitary makeup of that workforce and the duties that they perform. But it is especially hard for them, and they work in rural Oregon. There's not a lot of options for their spouses to earn a higher salary while their spouse is deployed. So this bill isn't going to make everything better, but it'll help. And they're still going to take a hit, but it won't be as severe. There's nothing we can do to make life perfect for them, but this bill will at least help a little bit. And, you know, Representative Esquivel was kind enough to carry it for us in the House. He managed to pull off a stunning victory of 59-0.
It was a photo finish, Madam Chair.
And, you know, some of my colleagues have been laughing about, you know, my tough bill here. But you know what? Some bills are just important. And this is one of those bills. It's just, you know, it's not going to change the shape of the world, but it'll make things a lot better for a few people. And we'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And this would be a good time for me to... this is a wonderful bill, but I have to make an announcement, or Pam will have a heart attack over there, that people in the audience who have cell phones, or as my dad would say, strawberries, or anything else electronic, please turn those items off because they do interfere with our recording system. So are there any questions for these witnesses? Yes, Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where does the funding come from this? There's obviously some funding that...
Employees who have paid leave time accrued on the books simply take their leave time and transfer it into the pool, and then the employee who is deployed, their family can draw out of that pool.
We'll follow up here, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson. This is given to our active duty personnel by their fellow co-workers.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't cost the state or doesn't cost local government anything. And it's so admirable that our employees would take the time to, and the effort and the money to support that veteran and that soldier that's in the field. It's very admirable.
Just follow up. I still need it explained to me. I'm not quite sure what... Just an example. Just take a person.
Right, Senator, Senator Anderson, you and Senator Rosenbaum, are friends. You work together. Senator Rosenbaum gets deployed, and her family needs some of the additional income. So you take your vacation or sick leave time that you've already got accrued, it's on the books, and it's there, and you say, I'm going to donate 16 hours to Senator Rosenbaum. They actually deduct it out of your paid leave bank and put it into the pool for her to draw from.
That's great.
That's why it doesn't count.
Now I understand. Yeah, I was confused.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, we would normally pay the employee that amount.
Yes.
And what they're doing is they're giving it to their fellow worker.
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair, and just, I guess, to add on to what was said, this is actually, as I said earlier, this is actually in place in several different governmental entities throughout the state right now. In fact, is when it first came up with President Courtney's proposal, which this corrects some of those errors, as I indicated, that we didn't do right. We actually had local governments come in, and they were not part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked to get put into it. They said, so we had to delay it, make an amendment to allow, not mandate it, but allow local governments to make that choice. And many of them have. We've heard this throughout the state. As a sidelight, and Mary mentioned something on the effect of the soldier that was deployed and was into foreclosure, there's also protections under the federal SERA, which is basically a serviceman protection for interest rates, foreclosures, everything. Unfortunately, sometimes either the family doesn't know about it, which is we're trying to do a much better job of informing our families, and or they know about it and the lender or the credit card company just ignores the law. There's also a bill that's going to be heard this week in House Judiciary that's going to try to address that and basically give attorney fees to those attorneys that will go in and get a claim against a company that's not acting in good faith. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. And when it happens, it becomes most of these people are not sophisticated enough, don't have their own attorneys, and don't have the money because they're already in a situation where they're working for less money now. So they get way down the line, then we hear about them, we finally have to go to the Department of Labor, Federal Department of Labor, and they typically get unscrewed, but there's usually a blemish on the credit record that takes more time and more effort. So there are some other avenues that we're looking at as we've seen this deployment go on and on and on continually. So we're trying to fix those things as we catch them as this is. And this is a wonderful fix because it's just one little piece we didn't quite get right the first time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you
for your testimony. I will close the public
hearing.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2298. Open a work session on House Bill 2298.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Telfer.
I think this is. Well, let me back up. I spent 18 years, I like to say, in the Marine Corps.
Senator Telfer, did you want to make a motion and then speak on it?
Oh, I move, let's see, I'm trying to think where we are here. I move that House Bill 2298B
move to the floor for a due pass recommendation.
So to speak, since I've got the floor right now, my father was a colonel in the Marine Corps, and I can tell you that I don't think there's enough money or enough gratitude that we can show our military personnel. So anything we can do to help, I'm all in favor of. So
thank you very much. And are there further comments from committee members? Okay, seeing none, I think we're ready for a vote. Pam, would you please call the roll?
Senator George.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair Telfer.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. And we need a carrier, and Senator Telfer.
Love to.
You carry this bill on the floor. Thank you very much. And I will close the work session on House Bill 2298. And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2202. And Jeremy, please tell us what you know about this bill.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2202 is brought from the Employment Department. It relates to unemployment insurance. It allows either party in an employment hearing to file a request to reopen the hearing following the issuance of a written decision by the administrative law judge dismissing the hearing. under current law? Well, I think our witnesses will testify at length as to how this operates, and especially as to why it's particularly important that we pass this. So it makes one change in the ability to reopen a hearing by either party in an unemployment hearing, and it also clarifies the manner in which the Employment Department can provide documents to parties participating in the hearing, and it clarifies the duty of the administrative law judge to explain all necessary issues to an unrepresented claimant or employer in a hearing. And there's no revenue impact, and you have the fiscal statement in front of you giving the impact, the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Jeremy. And I see Tom Byerly in the audience, so please come forward, Tom. And welcome back to the Commerce and Workforce Development Committee.
You become a regular. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Byerly. I'm the assistant, the administrator for the Unemployment Insurance Division of the Employment Department. I'm here to offer some testimony and a little bit of background on House Bill 2202. And as the committee administrator described, House Bill 2202 amends Oregon Law 657-270 to make it explicit when an individual can request reopening of a hearing. The current statute has subsection 6D, which provides, which was actually all of subsection 6 was added in 2003. And in 6D, it provides for the opportunity to request reopening if the hearing was dismissed. However, it is no longer explicit in law, or hasn't been explicit in law, what happens if a hearing hasn't been dismissed. Let's say a hearing was held, one or the other parties were not able to attend, a decision was issued, and now, for whatever reason, they want to get back and say their side of the story. An example I like to use is an unemployed worker quits her job or is dismissed from her job, let's say, for whatever reason, and is allowed unemployment insurance benefits. On the day of her hearing, her six-year-old child falls out of her bunk the top of the bunk bed and has to go to the emergency room. If you're in the emergency room, sometimes that can be a lengthy process, no fault of anybody's, they're just busy, and so the worker misses their hearing. Unfortunately, because she missed the hearing, the administrative law judge ruled differently and denied the benefits. Under the current law, this person would have no avenue to seek reopening, and we just wanted to make it explicit in the law that they could seek reopening. The bill also updates the manner in which we can provide documents. It says mail in the current law, and now we use faxes, we use email, so we want to just sort of bring us up to the current times. And we moved prior subsection 5 up to section 3, so the law flowed a little bit better, if you will. This provision that we're adding for allowing dismissals is actually a requirement by the Social Security Act. We're required by federal law and must conform to federal law for unemployment insurance to allow parties the opportunity to seek reopening if they're unable to attend their hearing. And this would bring us into conformity. And before subsection 6 was put in, dismissals were allowed, and the way subsection 6 can be read now, sometimes they're not allowed reopening. We just want to make it explicit. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And thank you, Tom, for that testimony. And I think that your last comment explained the fiscal impact of the bill, because the fiscal impact statement says that there would only be a fiscal impact on this state if we did not pass this bill, which would basically be it would put us out of conformance with federal law.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for that.
Okay, are there questions about House Bill 2202? Looks like you have answered them all.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who wishes to testify on House Bill 2202? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2202 and open a work session on House Bill 2202. And members, is there a motion?
I move. I move that House Bill 2202 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Manis Anderson moves House Bill 2202 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Pam, please call the roll.
Senator George.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair
Talbert. Aye. Motion carries. And I'm looking around for a carrier on this bill. And do we have a volunteer? And Senator Prozanski volunteers, so he will carry this bill. I think we still have a couple of people on this committee who have not yet carried a bill, so we have some really wonderful bills coming.
The chair should be keeping note of that.
Okay, so I will close the work session on House Bill 2202. And members, we do have a hearing on Wednesday. On Wednesday, we will be taking our initial public hearing on the two bills that we talked about when we had the Employment Department at the last informational meeting. And these are bills that deal with changing Oregon law in ways that will make us eligible for a large amount of money that's in the stimulus package. So please take a look at these bills ahead of time if you could, and we will try to get you as much information in advance of the hearing. I expect we'll have quite a few witnesses here
on Wednesday.
Sounds like
your good bills should pass.
Great. And with nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.